Of course, it's such a beautiful day, and I didn't want too many layers because I would only have to carry them.
You do realize these are mountains, right? It can go from sun to snow, and the paths are pretty rough and rocky. Maybe too much for flip-flops.
I'm pretty sure I'm prepared. I saw a picture of the hike on Instagram. Everyone wants to enjoy the outdoors. Just remember the three T's: trip plan, train, and take the essentials. Being unprepared could lead you to a situation where you need help, like from the North Shore Rescue, a community-based search and rescue team that provides life-saving services. For tips on how to prepare for a hike, book an info session, or to donate, visit their website at www.northshorerescue.com. That's www.northshorerescue.com.
Welcome back. First up in the second half is the fifth group of the hour, Praenatrix Cherished. Here is Long Way Around.
Until the end of its life, there it corrects us, or it bends towards the light. And once it's upon us depends, on the right set of circumstances, then there's no guarantee. Because no one is going to make it out of here alive. So don't go and leave us without saying all of your goodbyes this time. If you please, won't you meet us there? We seem to have lost our way about this place. It's no wonder that we're moving on. But we're all waking up to what's right in front of our face. Best to be compassionate. Everyone's moving at their own pace. But one thing I know is we didn't this far to give up now. We took the long way around, but now you're coming back home to me. Together we lost. You're coming back home to me. Yes, you're coming back home to me. Yes, you're coming back home to me. It's
Now I would like to... Sorry, that was long way around from Prenatrix Cherish. Now I'd like to shift gears on the cancellation of SFU football, which occurred on April 4th. I interviewed on SFU and a CJSF alumni on Wednesday night regarding the latest on the fight to reinstate the SFU football program. Hello, today is April 26th. On the line is... Please introduce yourself.
This is Farhan Lalji. I'm a SFU alum and a member of the group trying to bring SFU football back.
Farhan and I first met on December 3rd, 2022, in the press box of SFU Stadium during Sherman Bowl 34, the last game that SFU has played to this date. Farhan, thanks for the interview today.
No problem.
What was your reaction to SFU's president, Joy Johnson, announcing the cancellation of SFU football on April 4th when it had one season left in the Texas-based Lone Star Conference?
Yeah, I mean, at the time she didn't make the announcement, it was Teresa Hansen. Well, I shouldn't say that. Joy Johnson and Wade Marcos' names were on the release. I was really disappointed. I just thought it was needless. I thought it was disappointing that they... didn't consult stakeholders. I know in subsequent communications they claim to have actually consulted stakeholders, and that's not the case. They haven't. Certainly not in a meaningful way. Certainly not in a way that explained that the program was at this stage, and certainly stakeholders were not given any opportunity to try to help rectify the problem. So that part of it was disappointing. It wasn't just the decision, but it was the process of the decision, the timing of the decision that was immediate and certainly a shock to the kids because they didn't expect it at all. So I just was very, very disappointed.
Explain the injunction and lawsuit from five SFU football players against the university filed in the BC Supreme Court on April 13th.
Well, I think there's a duty on the part of the university to perform what was laid out in their scholarships and their agreements with those players. And it wasn't just about the dollars involved in the scholarships. It was about the opportunity. Those kids chose SFU and turned down other opportunities. Their expectation was to play football. And the fact that they're not gaining that and the fact that the reasons the university is giving for them not having those opportunities is wrong. So the injunction is based on a lot of that. There's been a lot of information that's already been deposed and put into play. And the injunction itself has been moved up until it was supposed to be on May 3rd. It's been moved up to Monday, May 1st. And I got to be honest, I hope that there's an 11th-hour solution here before it gets to that point. But the injunction is designed to have the program immediately reinstated, right, and to get back to what it was before that announcement was made on April the 4th. And then we can continue a process at that point to get the program into the right place. It's not necessarily a permanent solution. It's a temporary solution, but it's one we need right now.
I understand there have been discussions between the SFU Football Alumni Society, other people in the football world, and the SFU administration. How would you like to respond to the SFU administration, which claimed the following on April 20th? A. All parties agree that SFU can't play varsity football in NCAA. B. There will be no varsity football in SFU this fall. And C, a special advisor will review football options for SFU.
I don't agree with it. As far as the first point where they said that they can't play in the NCAA, I think that's right long term, but they did have a schedule for 2023, and they should have executed the season. They should have played the season. It was there before them, and they could have made whatever decision they needed at the end of the year, but do I think that the Lone Star Conference was a viable long-term solution for SFU? I don't. So I agree with that part in terms of the distance. The NCAA Division II is a level. Could we play it? Potentially, but there just aren't enough teams out here. So I understand why they want to get out of the Lone Star Conference after 2023, but they should have played 2023. After that, okay, I'll give them that, but long-term, it didn't make sense. But, you know, the truth is, if it didn't make sense long-term, they've known that for some time. We've known that for some time. So why did it take so long? They should have been through the process of trying to find a solution long before they have been. And they didn't try to start finding a solution truly until March. And that's wrong. That shouldn't be happening. They should have begun this process a year ago because it just wasn't feasible the way it was going in Lone Star. They didn't. They waited too long and boxed themselves into a corner. So you have to think it's intentional. As far as 2023, disagree with that. There's no reason why a season can't be played in 2023. We've spoken to a number of teams in the Lone Star Conference, outside of the Lone Star Conference, in Division III and the NAIA, closer to British Columbia and Simon Fraser, and U Sports in Canada. There are multiple schools that are willing to play us. So if there's some sort of exhibition schedule that includes all of those possibilities, then I think we should explore all of that. But they put up a few roadblocks and said, no, we can't do that for, you know, a number of different reasons that are not unsolvable, right? Like, everything's got logistical challenges. No one said it would be seamless and easy, but ultimately, the university's put us in that position by pulling out of Lone Star a year early, right? So, to me, if you made the decision, then it's incumbent on you as a university and an athletic department to come up with some solutions to allow these kids to play in 2023. So they've taken away the option that was already in place and now aren't helping with solutions, right? And the third point, as far as the special advisor, that is very, very transparent what they're trying to do there. The reality is, if you cancel this 2023 season and the program stops for 8 months, no coaches, no player engagement, no training, no recruiting, no keeping the brand alive. If all of that closes and goes dark for 8 months, the program is dead. Even if all of a sudden the alleged special advisor comes up and says, oh, sure, let's start again, wouldn't happen, because there'd be nothing left to save. So what they're trying to do is create that scenario, just push it down the line. They knew they got criticized heavily for not having a meaningful process when they first made the decision. So now they want to have an incredibly long process that has the net effect. That special advisor that's supposedly going to take until the end of the calendar year, that is designed to cancel the program.
Tell me about the Save SFU Football Day, which occurred yesterday, one day after multiple SFU organizations, such as SFSS and SFPERG, wrote a letter to the administration to reinstate the SFU football program.
The fundraising campaign went extremely well. We had over 800 individual donors. We were able to raise over $700,000. A lot of that came in the form of matching from BC Lions owner Omar Doman and a number of his business colleagues. But nonetheless, the level of engagement was incredible. You know, we can tell how much this program means not only to SFU alumni, but the entire sporting community across the country, right? Like, we got donations from everywhere. You know, the Hamilton Tiger Cats fans donated. Their alumni donated. You know, different interest groups in the United States donated. And, you know, and as far as the Mar Doman and his group, along with some of the other donations, some of them have been committed to for 5 years. So there's a sustainability piece to all of this as well. So the university says money's not an issue, but we've added to the pie, right? Like, if they say they have enough money, great. We'll add to it to make it an even better version of the program. So so that part of it went well. And the letter was inspiring. You know, I think that it's important to know this is not just about SFU football players. This is about SFU students and opportunities for students. You know, there's a lot of talk about inclusion. This program is 50% BIPOC. The coaching staff is 50% BIPOC. You've got a university that's 58% women. So to have an enrollment opportunity for 100 males is not wrong. Like, that's a good thing to create a level of equity within the institution. You know, you've got charters that the university has entered into, which was pointed out in that letter. You know, the Okanagan Charter, among others, that are designed to create a process that is inclusive and to make sure that there's consultation that happens before big decisions are made that create opportunities for BIPOC, that create opportunities for Indigenous people. So all of those things line up in support of the reinstatement of SFU football, and I'm really proud of the students because this is kind of why you go to university, right? You go to university for classes, but you also go to get involved and to have an awakening and to make change and, you know, to do positive things. And I also think that that letter was a reflection of students who feel like their voices aren't heard and that they've been somewhat marginalized and there hasn't been a level of due process on a number of university decisions, right? And if I'm the student society and I just spent $10 million on a new stadium, and the biggest reason that stadium is there is football, I'd be upset too. So I'm proud of the students. You know, people look at that letter, and it was so well done, high level, and articulate that people think the adults wrote it for them. No, they didn't. Those students wrote the letter, and they did a fabulous job of articulating their arguments.
On the same day as the Save SFU Football Day, April 25th, 2023, CBC reported SFU's 25-page response to the lawsuit from five players, where it claimed the plaintiff's evidence does not support alleged contract's existence. Please respond.
I haven't seen that, so I'm not sure. I'm not sure how to respond. So are you suggesting that there's no case?
According to the article, it was just only a line or two. SFU filed a response to the BC Supreme Court claiming that the plaintiffs, five players, they don't have evidence to support alleged contracts, scholarships, from what I understand.
I'm not sure how they would make that claim because they've got scholarship documents. So, you know, let's see what it looks like, right? I mean, they're all veteran players that have been around. They're not freshman players coming in, but, you know, there's certainly been an obligation made with the school to those players. And, you know, and there's other arguments that go along with it. So hopefully the case that we've made is good. You know, I can't tell you I've seen the scholarship documents, but, you know, my understanding is that, you know, legally an obligation has been entered into.
Two more questions. Which group are you associated with in the current fight to save the SFU football program?
Oh, many. Like, you know, I'm certainly involved with the SFU football alumni, even though I've never been a part of their board. You know, I didn't play football at SFU, but I've certainly done, you know, work with them to support what they're doing. I'm also just generally a stakeholder, right? I'm an alumni at SFU, want to be proud of my university, and I'm also a 30-year high school football coach and member of the BC High School Football Board of Directors. So the thought that more than half of the opportunities for BC High School players to move on and play at the next level has been taken away certainly bothers me tremendously because it has great, it's got huge, huge reaching effects in the football community at the grassroots level, right? So I think I have a lot of skin in the game on a lot of different levels.
Finally, reports came out today that 11 SFU football alumni, namely the former BC Lions Louis Passaglia and Sean Millington, have demanded to have their names removed from the SFU Sports Hall of Fame. How does today's development change the fight to save the SFU football program?
You know, that wasn't something that was orchestrated by the alumni. Those Hall of Famers wanted to do it on their own and got together and made that decision. So I would hope the university continues to realize just how important this is to so many people. And I want the university to realize the level of institutional reputation damage that's occurred here, right? This bothers a lot of people. There is a massive stain on the university as a result of this. This is not CJSF news. This is national news in Canada. The CBC National, CTV National, the Globe and Mail, multiple outlets, the National Post have talked about this story. This is a national story, and it has affected many people. And, you know, yet another example of just how many people are hurt and upset by this decision, and another example of people just simply weren't consulted by the university, people who have put their blood, sweat, and tears into that institution. I would hope, like, that's not easy, right? When you get into a Hall of Fame, that is a massive accomplishment for any athlete. You know, for a lot of those athletes, that's probably their only one. Like, Louis Persaglia might be in the, you know, the Canadian Football Hall of Fame, but, you know, I would imagine at least half the people that are on that, like, that's their one big recognition, and that matters to them. And for them to be willing to sacrifice that, that says a lot.
Thank you for your interview today. Best of luck in Kansas City, which will host the NFL draft tomorrow night. And please stay safe.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
You too.
That was my interview with Farhan Logi, a TSN football reporter who is an SFU and ACJSF alumni. Also on April 26th, Peter Julian, the NDP MP for New Westminster Burnaby, praised the fundraising efforts to save SFU football and implored the administration to save the program in Ottawa's parliament. Two more developments occurred yesterday, where the BC Lions owner, Amar Doman, who was featured on the show last Friday, announced on Twitter that there were over 1,000 donors who donated almost $1 million on the SFU Pledge Day on April 25th. Also on April 27th, 2023, Kerry Lynn Findlay, the Conservative MP for South Surrey White Rock, also spoke in Ottawa's Parliament to save the SFU football program. Today, the SFU football mom squad sent a letter to the SFU administration to save SFU football.
Standing up against racism is an ongoing battle. How will you help?
To teach my children about systemic racism and about historic and persistent colonialism and the responsibility that comes with their privilege. I will use my voice to speak up, and I will make more space at the table.
I will continue to educate myself and others in my community about the racism and inequities faced by BIPOC.
We will not be silent and idle.
This message is brought to you by the Canadian Anti-Racism Youth Coalition. Visit caryc.ca for more information about how you can stand up and speak out.
I'd like to talk about the Surrey Police transition at this time. Today, Mike Farnworth, BC's Public Safety Minister and Solicitor General, announced a strong recommendation for the City of Surrey to continue with the Surrey Police Service. Farnworth also announced additional funding for the City of Surrey to continue with the SPS, as the BC government determined 734 SPS officers will cost $30 million extra per year. While the City of Surrey can try to keep the RCMP, the BC provincial government set multiple binding conditions, including paying $72 million in severance to end the SPS, get the SPS officers to the Surrey RCMP, and not poach officers from other BC RCMP attachments, where there are reports of 1,500 vacancies throughout the province. However, the Surrey Mayor Brenda Locke, who campaigned on keeping the Surrey RCMP and killing the SPS, doubled down on her quest to keep the Surrey RCMP.
Standing up against racism is an ongoing battle. How will you help?
I will employ an intersectional anti-racist lens to support the racialized community as they exercise their human rights.
I will refuse to be silenced. And I will help others raise their voices against hate.
I will listen, learn, speak up, and take actions.
This message is brought to you by the Canadian Anti-Racism Youth Coalition. Visit caryc.ca for more information about how you can stand up and speak out.
Thank you for listening to episode 16 of the Steve Chong Show in 2023. Part of Open Mic on CJSF 90.1 FM, the campus community radio station for Simon Fraser University. I'm your host, Steve Chong. Coming up at 4, it's Voice of the North. Now to the last tune, B44, It is WZR Dry Ave, Pacific Grayscale Volume 2, Next 95.
Jan Arden, and if you're listening to something fabulous, well, you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM Simon Fraser University Radio, streaming on the internet at cjsf.ca.
This is broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain.